that are most important. Yes, I believe this program can work for me too. Tonight's speaker is sort of awesome. Her name is Cassie. Call her Cass, but anyway, I met Cassie, 3 years ago probably, and Cassie disappeared for a little bit, and when she came back in this time around, I happened to get a phone call, and Cassie was hurting. You know, Cassie, like many of us in here, had the disease had taken her out, alcoholism had taken her back to the drink. And the one thing I could tell you about Cassie since she's been back here this time around is she's already worked the steps, right? She already has a sponsee, right? And I'll let her tell you how long she has sober. But I love people like Cass, man. They come here, they get down, they get busy, and they start doing the deal. And from what I've seen, they stick around. So I'm really excited to have her here tonight. She's a little nervous, so give her a little hell. Thank you, Cassie.
I'm Cassie. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Thanks, Cassie.
I am pretty nervous. My sobriety date is 5/22/2012. I'm 27. Start off with my childhood a little bit. My parents are divorced. I didn't have a bad childhood, really. Pretty normal. My earliest memories are of my mother and knowing something was off with her. Like being in the car and knowing that she wasn't driving safe. Waking up in the middle of the night, going to her room, finding her passed out, either next to the bed or in front of the toilet. I explained to her how those things were making me scared as a little girl, and that I noticed it was happening when she was drinking. And she would tell me, okay, honey, you know, let me know when I've had two drinks, and I'll stop. So I would, you know, be like, Mom, you had two drinks. And she'd yell at me because she is the adult and I'm the child telling her not to drink. Needless to say, when I was young, I always wanted to be older. When I saw older, like we'd be at the lake, I'd see kids out on the boat without their parents. I wanted to be on the boat without my drunk mom. I really wanted to be able to do my own thing without her. When I was 13, I started using. I'm not going with singleness purpose here because it's impactful later in my story. So the first thing I did was I ate acid. Didn't drink, didn't smoke pot. And from that point on, like, that's really all I cared about, you know. It wasn't about school, it wasn't about things a 13-year-old should care about. It was like, how am I going to get high? And also, let me say, when I was younger, like, I remember in elementary school when you're learning to write cursive or whatever, and they have, like, you know, those lines drawn out all perfectly. Well, I'd bring that home to my mom, and she would, like, yell at me and tell me how fucking horrible my handwriting was. It looked like chicken scratch, and I was going to work at Kmart or McDonald's, like, that I was going to. So, like, from a young age, my mom always told me, like, that wasn't good enough. Like, that's not good enough. You're not going to be anything. And I'm, you know, I know my mom's story, so I understand her now. But anyway, so dropped acid when I was 13 in the middle school parking lot. Awesome. We're going places, clearly. Then I drank, then I smoked weed. I remember, like, hanging out of my girlfriend Megan's window at her parents' house. She had, like, this awful pink, or no, purple room. It was horrible. And we're smoking out of, like, tinfoil schwag.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeds popping in the tinfoil. smoking swag, and we also wanted to hang out with older guys. So her mom used to take us in the minivan and drop us off at Town Center Mall, and we would prowl the mall and pick up boys, and then we would lie about our age and how they didn't know that we, like, we clearly weren't 15, but we would just. It's a mess. But needless to say, my entire high school career was doing that, like hanging out with the older guys, and the only older guys that were going to hang out with younger girls were the druggies anyway, so it's perfect. I'm down to do whatever you have, as long as I don't have to pay for it, even better. And essentially, that's what my high school career was. My mother and I butted heads continuously. She drank still all the time. It was just, I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and she was not gonna fucking tell me what I could and couldn't do. So we would have these fights. I'd be like, I'd leave. She'd call the police, call me in as a runaway. I'd be in the neighborhood, see the cops come, like, you're looking for me, my mom's shit-faced, you'll see when you get there. One incident, the same thing happened. She's like, I'm on my, you know, old school Nokia phone with an orange phone. On the phone with my father, because my parents are divorced. Like, do you hear her? She told me to go. You told me to go? Yep. Leave my key and make sure I'm comfortable wherever I go. I'm like, so Dad, you heard her. I'm leaving. So I know my mom's, like, routine here, so I know the cops will be showing up in about 15 minutes, so I just wait in the neighborhood for them. And they basically tell me, you know, you can't do anything, you're however old, you have to live here, you have to abide by your mom's rules, however, when you're 17, you can leave. So that was, like, my focus was my 17th birthday. I am out of here. We said some horrible, horrible things to each other. You know, I remember one time she, like, took off her belt like she was going to spank me when I was, like, 16. This isn't happening. And I left when I was 17. Like I said, I was not focused on school. I was not, my main, like, all I could think about was turning 17 and the weekend. Because on the weekend, I could get fucked up. And not have to deal with my mother. I lied constantly. I would stay at friends' house so we could sneak out. We'd get caught by their parents, and their parents would call my mom. I would walk through the halls at Walton and be like, can I have $1 for the vending machine? Thanks. Can I have $1 for the vending machine? Thanks. And then Friday night, I'd be rolling. So by my senior year, no one was giving me any fucking money for the business. I didn't think there was a problem. I'm just having fun. So I was 17. I moved out. I stayed on my brother's couch for a little while. He was making me pay him $200 a month to sleep on his couch, which I felt was a little fucked up because I'm a sister and I'm sitting on your couch. So my boyfriend at the time told me I could come live with him. Well, he lived in Woodstock, and I still wanted to graduate. So he was a mechanic. Some things happened. My mom took my car. He ended up buying me an 89 Mitsubishi Eclipse so I could graduate. I ended up driving this car drunk, and Adam was not too pleased about that. We got into a huge argument. I continued my drinking. I remember it was a cold night. By this time, I had my own apartment with my girlfriend, Katie, and there were some people over at my house. I continued my drinking that night. I was probably throwing a tantrum because I used to throw a lot of those. And I remember I smoked a blunt to the head. Like I said, it was cold outside, so I had on, like, you know, a tank top and a long sleeve shirt and a hoodie, like Sophie shorts, and then some, like, really awesome Tommy Hilfiger fleece pants that I wish I still had. I went to sleep in my room, and my room connected from the bathroom, like, to the kitchen area, and then you go down the hall and get to my room, too. So, I remember, like, I've been friends with these kids that were there at my house since I was, like, young, you know, 13 probably. But I still locked both my bedroom doors and went to bed because my boyfriend was, like, done talking to me for the night. I woke up with this guy in my room on top of me beginning to rape me, and I pushed him off because I was, like, you know, drunk, passed out, high, like, woke up with all this, and woke everyone up in the apartment and ran to my boyfriend's house. And like I said, I was, you know, queen tantrum, so he thought I was making this up for attention. And he said if it was that big of a deal to call the police. So I called the police. The police came. This guy had taken my doorknob off with a steak knife, and the door frame was cracked all the way up. Like, the door was clearly locked. What's locked door mean to you? So pretty much he just took a plea bargain, and I didn't want to have to go to court. So he went to jail. I had a group of friends that were shooting a lot of heroin. I was better than them because I was just snorting oxy. And, you know, like, that's way different than sticking a needle in your arm. And these group of friends started shooting dope when we were seniors. So that happened with my assault, and I went away to college at Jacksonville State in Alabama. I don't know if anyone has been to Anniston, but there's nothing to do there. Absolutely nothing. There's a bunch of KFCs, and I think they were building a Waffle House when I was there because I was pretty sure I was going to have to work there because I couldn't find a job anywhere, which was really bad for a girl coming from East Cobb, and I'm snobby as shit, and I'm not working at a fucking Waffle House. So needless to say, I hardly ever went to class, and when I did go to class, I was still drunk from the night before. One day this guy was like, where can I get some chicken? And I was like, the fucking Winn-Dixie down the road. Like, I'm telling him how to get to the Winn-Dixie. He's like, no, some chicken. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, some meth. And I'm like, chicken? What the fuck? And that was the last straw for me. So I packed my shit and got my car and headed back to Atlanta. My boyfriend at the time lived, it was this guy named Adam at this point, and he lived in Atlanta, so I was like, yeah, this guy's up, people are asking me for chicken, I'm getting out of here, this is like, I'm coming home. Well, when I came back, surely I was gonna go, live with my mother again, so I needed to find a job, and for some reason, some girls at college were talking about how we should drive to Atlanta on the weekends from Anniston and work in a strip club to make money. So when I got back to Atlanta, I was like, maybe I should get a job waitressing at a strip club. My boyfriend's like, I think you should dance. And I'm like, right. So, I'm 18. I am working at Mardi Gras. You know, continuing to drink and do drugs and whatever, and taking care of this guy. And, I remember, like, my first night coming back from the club and counting all this money. I'd made $300, and I was, like, in no time at all, like, 4 hours, and I was just happy as a pig in shit. This will work. I can work with this. So, Phil sold drugs. We were constantly getting high. I did not know until later that Phil would put things like trazodones in my drink and sleeping pills to make me go to sleep so he could leave and go do whatever he wanted to while I was passed out. I moved from Mardi Gras because that place sucked. They have these things called excitement magazines in the strip club. So I was flipping through one day because Mardi Gras was dead, and I'm like, calling strip clubs, are y'all hiring? Can I come get a job? And Oasis was like, yeah, come on. So I was like, peace. left mid shift and then went to the Oasis. At the Oasis, my coke use skyrocketed. I saw that I could make a lot of money if I was doing coke with my customers. So that's what I did. I was drinking super heavily all the time. I'm not able to drive myself home from work because they make the girls blow into a breathalyzer before you can leave. While I was working at the Oasis, I was 20. I went to I think it was a Green Day concert with some of the girls from the club. Picked up my car after the concert, drunk, had like a little bit of pot and in the car with me, and ran the stop sign and pulled out in front of a cop leaving, and obviously got a DUI. They just dumped the pot out, and I remember calling Philip and being like, you need to come get me right now out of here. Like, Doraville jail is little and disgusting, and like my thinking process like was so insane that I didn't get the fucking DUI because I pulled out in front of a cop. I got a DUI because there was a yellow lighter in my car, and yellow lighters are bad luck. So that's why I got a DUI. Like, seriously, never had another yellow lighter. I think I have a yellow lighter today because obviously that's not true. So that was the first time I was introduced to AA, because I had to come to a meeting because the court ordered me, but I was just doing it to get my paper signed. One time with Phil, we were partying one night, eating a bunch of X, and he had a lot of pills at the house, and some chick was trying to set him up to get robbed, and you know, that little setup happened, and these guys rushed into the apartment in ski masks and guns drawn, all in black. I thought it was the fucking police for sure. Like, I thought it was like the SWAT team coming after us. And in all actuality, it was someone just trying to steal his drugs. This kid was really fucked up on the couch. He didn't get up fast enough. They pistol whipped him. This kid was like 17. I seriously thought that this guy was going to shoot me when I'm laying down on this carpet, because he was the only one without a mask, and I had seen his face, and, you know, I've seen all those movies, so that's what happens. I say that because, like, any normal person would see that that's fucked up, and things like that don't happen. That's not normal, and you need to change your behavior. So whatever, on my 21st birthday, I got shit-faced at the Pink Pony. I was working there at this time, like completely wasted. And, you know, I had been doing oxys and snorting heroin every now and then. And this particular night, I wanted some heroin, and my girlfriend wouldn't take me downtown to get it, and I threw another Cassie tantrum and kicked my front windshield out of my car from the passenger seat with my heel of my shoe. Awesome. I woke up in the morning, I'm like, oh, fuck, please, please, please. Shit. Like, that happened. So, I mean, it was just really crazy, really crazy. I started dating this guy, Drew, and my oxy intake was getting really intense. I'm talking like 680s in one sitting, and I'm not getting fucked up. I had, you know, withdrawn all the money that I could on my cash advances from my credit cards. It was getting really intense. So needless to say, heroin came in a lot more often. I was still just snorting it, and I was clearly better than everyone else because I'm only snorting heroin and you're shooting it up. So one night, Drew and I got fentanyl patches. I don't know if y'all know what that is, but like, the cool thing to do was cut them open and eat the gel inside. And I had been warned, you know, don't take Xanax with this. And I'm like, I take Xanax and Oxys all the time. I'll be fine. And then I woke up in an ambulance. Apparently, Drew and I had gone to sleep. He had an inkling to roll over and check on me. I was blue. The paramedics had to, like, shock me in the bedroom, like, in front of Drew. It was really fucked up, and I can't even tell you, like, what I did the next day. Like, I really only remember the ambulance ride. But I'm sure that I got out of the hospital and got fucked up. At this point in my life, I got a second DUI, not because I was fucked up on pills and hit a car while I was driving, but because Drew pissed me off and I was angry and it's his fault. So, second DUI, Drew and I break up. I had quit working at the Pony by this time, made my way back to the Oasis. Met this guy, John. I knew, like, he walked into the strip club, and I just knew when I saw him, I was supposed to be with him. It was like divine intervention, and I knew. And, needless to say, it all worked out, and we got together. Well, I had started doing this drug called Nubane, which is what they give to pregnant women when, I don't know, they're in pain, I guess? I don't know. And you just give yourself a shot in your muscle, like you have a little vial and a needle, and you just give yourself a shot. And so I had become addicted to that. And I had my little sunglasses case in my purse with my fixings for that, and John was really a nosy guy and, like, was going through my purse one day and found all that. And I thought for sure he was going to break up with me, like, oh my god, like, he just found needles and a vial of drugs, like, oh, wow. And he's like, I want some. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. Then at one point, John was banging on our bedroom door. I had locked him out. I was trying to snort some heroin without him knowing, and he busted through, and, like, I thought for sure at that point he was going to leave me because I'm snorting heroin alone in my room. He wanted some, and that is when my heroin use really took off. I was, you know, keeping me high, keeping John high, and I was hanging out with a bunch of people that were shooting dope. So one day, I told my best friend, Clint, to show me how to shoot up, and he was like, nope. And I said, you can tell me or I'll Google it and kill myself. So he did, and the next 9 or 10 months of my life, like, just my life just spiraled out of control. I had always paid my bills. I was, you know, dancing this entire time. It's been like 6 years. Like, I always paid my bills. But heroin took control of me like nothing ever had. Like, I would wake up in the morning, that would be my first thought. I don't want to go to work, but I want to get dope. So I just go to work to make enough money to get dope for me and John, and then come home. And what can I pawn today so I don't have to go to work? And I mean, it was just, it was getting bad. And one night during the day, I think, like, actually, let me back up 2 seconds. John and I were high one night watching, like, MTV or something, and that Steve-O documentary came on. You guys familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're high, and all of a sudden, Steve-O starts, like, you know, doing that nitrous oxide, and we're like, fuck yeah, let's do this. So that became into our mix, where we would go through, like, 2 boxes each, like, a day, and, like, we would get angry when we didn't have it, and so that got kind of expensive, too, on top of the dope, and I just stopped checking the mail. Like, I wasn't gonna, you know, I didn't have any money to pay bills, and because I was shooting it all up or inhaling it, and John and I had told ourselves many a times, like, we really need to stop. This is getting out of control. We really need to stop. We really need to stop. We'd be like, okay, we'd be cool for, like, 2 days, and then withdrawals would come, and then we'd go get high, and we'd be like, okay, that we're really not going to do it again, and then we would, and it got to the point we had a dog, like we weren't feeding our dog. We weren't feeding ourselves when we were eating. It was from the Quick Trip. It was really nasty. And one day we were sitting on the soccer field, and like the desperation and hopelessness that he and I were both feeling on that soccer field, like I cannot even put it into words to describe to y'all how painful that was. Because like I'm sure I was a mirror reflection for him, and he was a mirror reflection for me. I was like, there has to be more to life than just this. Like, there has to be more to life than just this. And I had a girlfriend that had gotten sober, and we are longtime friends. Emily Newman, I'm sure some of y'all know her. And I called her for help. And she brought me to an NA meeting. And so I went to a couple NA meetings, and I'm like, all right. I got it. I just quit doing dope. I can still smoke pot, eat Xanax, drink, and work at the strip club. And I'll be good. So I tried to do that. And at this point, I was working at the Cheetah. I'd had a really shitty day at night at work. I left the Cheetah, and it was like day 28 of no dope, but everything else in between. And I wanted to get high, so I called some friends that lived in McDonough. I knew that they would get me high, and I drove there, and they were like, don't OD, don't OD. I'm like, I'm not, just give me the fucking rig. And I woke up the next morning not knowing what the fuck happened. I was naked in this guy's bed. All my clothes were neatly folded next to me. I'm like, what the fuck? And he's like, you almost died. Like, your heart stopped. We had to throw you into a cold bathtub to get your heart started. And then me and my brother gave you CPR for an hour and a half. I was like, oh, because my chest fucking hurt. And thank God that I was with, you know, these junkies that actually gave shit about me, because if I had been with other people, they might have just tossed me outside and said tough shit or given up after 30 minutes. And my initial reaction is thinking, oh my God, I never went home. John is going to be pissed. Can I have some drugs to take with me? Not, oh my God, I almost died. Nothing. I need drugs to take home with me. And that drive home was a super scary ride. I was driving on 285 all over, like the five lanes or four lanes, swerving back and forth. God had to have like made me invisible for me to get home, for me not to have killed someone, kill myself, or be arrested. Like, there's just no way possible that that happened, because I was extremely fucked up. So by that point, I was ready to do what any of these people at these NA meetings were telling me to do. So I got a sponsor. I started working steps. I had a bunch of friends that were junkies that were trying to get sober at the time. Then Emily had a bunch of friends that she was getting sober with at the time. I was around a good group of people. By this time, John had gone off to rehab, and this girl and I smoked pot one night after a meeting. I had people over at my house, and once they left, Ashley and I smoked pot. Well, Ashley got honest. And I'm like, and so my friend, like, I'm sure Lindsay was asking me about it. Emily, did you smoke pot with Ashley? No. You see it? No. No. And I mean, I maintained that lie for 9 months. I later looked at my journal, and I had written in my journal, like, I can't believe Ashley is telling people I smoked with her, because I just didn't. That's how insane my thinking was, that I'm lying to myself in my journal about something that I didn't do that I really did. Fucking crazy. So around 9 months, like, I'm starting to think about my year, and then I'm thinking about, oh, fuck, I smoked pot that one time. And, like, in meetings, people were talking to me. They were, you know, like, they knew, and talking about getting honest, and everyone knew that I'd smoked, and, like, all this insane thoughts. And I knew I didn't want to get high again, so I knew I had to get honest. And whatever the outcome was from getting honest would be God's will, because I was doing the next right thing. So I called my sponsor at like 11 o'clock. I said, I need to come over. Oh my God, I have something to tell you. And I told her, and she was like, okay, so change your clean date. Good job. So it was like not this huge deal that I had made it out to be, and I carried that shit with me for 9 months and was so uncomfortable for 9 months. I was volunteering at this place called Hero House. That's in Kennesaw. It's sober living for college students. John and I were still together. By this time, he had gotten out of treatment. We ended up breaking up around November. Like, I thought for sure that I would get high over this. I didn't. I threw a tantrum, I'm sure. I think I did that in my car, so I didn't let him see that. But it was pretty emotional for me. And Hero House at that time, like a week later, offered me a job in California. Perfect. My boyfriend and I had like 3 years just broke up. You want to move me across the country to work for you? I'm in. Well, I didn't immediately say I'm in, but after talking to some people, I decided that would be a great idea. So I moved to California. NA at that time out there for me sucked. Like, they didn't start meetings on times. Like, the chairs were never set up. It was just way weird, so I got involved in AA. I linked up with a lot of solid people out there. It was great. Loved California. One day I got a phone call from my father saying, have you talked to your mom? She's talking all crazy. I was like, what do you mean? She said to come get her body tomorrow. I was like, well, Dad, it's like, it's noon in California, so it's 3 o'clock. If she's that shit-faced and talking like that, why don't, you know, you need to call the police.
Yeah.
And I ended up calling my mom and pretending like I hadn't heard word from my dad. And my mom was basically telling me goodbye and that I was going to be okay and whatever in the suicide attempts. So I had a friend's father bought me a round trip ticket back to Atlanta so I could come be with my mom in the hospital. When I got to the hospital, while we're dealing with her suicide attempt, they found lung cancer. So my living amends to my mother is to be a better daughter to her, and to me at that point was coming back from California to be here for her, because I'm her only child. So I get my stuff shipped back from California to me. 2 weeks later, my mom's driving. She has a seizure while she's driving. Grady Hospital calls me. They found out that the cancer had spread to her brain. So what we thought was stage one cancer 2 weeks ago is now stage four cancer because it has spread to her brain. Still going to meetings, still working with my sponsor. I lost my conscious contact with God, and it fucked me. So I was trying to take care of everything myself, my mom, me moving back, you know, whatever. And I used to go out with friends sober, like to bars and stuff, when people would offer me a drink. Like, no, I'm in recovery. Like, I don't care. Who knows? Yeah. And one night I was out with some friends and someone offered shots. And I didn't say I'm in recovery. I just took the shot. And my girlfriends looked at me and they were like, what the fuck? And I was like, I don't want to talk about it. Let's just keep this rolling. So, a couple weeks later, I called my sponsor, went over and saw her, told her that I'd started drinking, that I wasn't picking up a white key tag. And she told me I was either lying to myself at that moment or I was lying to myself when I did the first step with her, that she had never met a heroin addict that could drink successfully. And I'm like, well, you have now. So, I remember talking to my best friend Clint about my decision to go back out and drink. I was like, I can do this. I have self-knowledge now. Like, I know how to drink responsibly. I'm not going to smoke pot because that makes me lazy and unmotivated. I'm not going to eat pain pills because, like, that's an opiate. And I'm definitely not going to shoot dope. definitely won't shoot dope. But if I do any of those things, Clint, I'm going to go back to the rooms. Also, over this time period, I have enrolled in school of my sobriety. I'm doing really well in school. I never did well in school. So I start my drinking. I started drinking heavily, very quickly. I would say I'm only going to have a couple drinks. I would be shutting Wild Wings down. You know, I'm only going to drink beer like six Jaeger shots later. One night, like I guess I ate pot cookies, so like I wasn't smoking pot, I was just eating. So that wasn't an issue. I did cocaine one night and I like felt super like ashamed of that. Like I don't even like cocaine, like why would I do that? And so I didn't do that again. I started eating pain pills. Because people will just be like, hey, you want this? And I'm like, yeah. And one night I was downtown drunk and I decided I wanted some heroin. I was with a friend of mine. I said, you need to take me to the Bluffs. He's like, it's 3:00 in the morning. I'm not taking you to the Bluffs. I said, oh, I'll drive myself then. You want me and my Lexus to go down to the Bluffs by myself at 3:00 in the morning drunk. So like manipulated him into taking me. Got high, shot up immediately, like I didn't snort it. I shot up with a steroid needle. It was really fucked up. There was a lot of blood. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that again, I'm not going to do that again. And then I ended up shooting up dope again. And then I got high with a girlfriend. And we were like, well, we're really not going to do that again. We really can't do that again. Like, the next day I was puking. I was with my mom. I had to lie until I was sick or something. And, like, I'm, like, driving and stopping to puke. And then this friend and I got high another time. We were like, we can't do this again. Same story, different day. And then I had a work meeting. I'm a bartender. My boss said something along the lines of, if a friend tells you they're not going to do something and they do it, we need to be a good enough friend to call them out on it and say, hey, what's going on? Because you said you weren't going to do that. And now you are. And as soon as he said that, a light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, holy shit, I am smoking pot, I'm eating pain pills, and I'm shooting dope. I'm doing A, B, and C of all the things that I said that I wouldn't do. And it was just like, shit. So I continued this work meeting. It was a really strange coincidence that Emily had called me that morning. I hadn't talked to her in about 5 months, and we were both going to be at the same pool later that day. So I go to the pool, whatever, like I'm drinking. Emily shows up, and I start having a heart-to-heart with Emily. And I'm like, I'm doing the three things that I said I wouldn't do. She was like, well, what did you say that you would do? And I was like, I said I'd go back to the rooms. And she was like, okay, well, what do you think you need to do? And I was drunk, and I called my old sponsor and went to a meeting. I also shared at that meeting, and I advise you, if you're drunk at a meeting, don't share. You're just going to embarrass yourself, and you're not going to remember what the fuck you said. So over the next, like, day and a half, I did a lot of journaling, like lots of self-reflection. I still thought that I was a woman of my word and did my best to live with integrity. And I had told myself that if I smoked pot, ate pain pills, or shot dope, that I would come back to the rooms. So while I'm journaling, you know, I'm trying, what's my purpose? Well, I believe, you know, I'm supposed to be of service to others. How am I best of service to others when I'm sober? Nothing ever bad came from me being sober the first 2 years that I had. So I made the decision to come back. And I came back to AA rather than NA because I had now qualified myself as an alcoholic. I was no longer an addict, an alcoholic. because every time I drink and I draw a line in the sand, I erase that line and push it back. Every single time. Period. Every single time. Always. I might be able to be cool for 2 weeks, maybe 3 months, however long, but eventually that line in the sand is going to change for me. Period. So I called Bob, started going to some meetings, met an awesome woman, asked her to sponsor me. She took me through the steps. It was a really powerful experience to be able to share with someone, again, my inventory of all my shit. Of course, like, I kept one thing out for about 30 minutes. She's like, are you sure? I was like, this is a little different than the first time I did my fifth step because I, like, felt so free, and I don't really feel that. And she's like, well, did you leave anything out? And I was like, well, this one thing. And then I was freed. You know, Larry Scott worked 10, 11, and 12 with me, and he is an extremely powerful man. I try to practice these principles in my life every day. It's not easy by any means. Before I came here tonight, I was at a funeral for a friend, Jack, that died last weekend from drugs. This disease will kill you. It will kill you if you single yourself out as only a whatever addict. A cokehead, a junkie, a whatever. I've been, since I was 13, to 21 funerals. Four of them were not caused by drug and alcohol. That's some pretty fucking powerful shit. Like, 17 deaths could have not happened. I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful for my journey. I'm incredibly grateful for my relapse, because if I hadn't had my relapse, I would have always had in the back of my head that I can drink normally. And now I'm quite sure that I can't, because I've taken every avenue and path to try to figure that out. After I worked the steps, I got a sponsee. She's worked all of her steps. She now has a sponsee. This program is truly amazing. It can absolutely change your life. If you're new, like, I urge you to write a list of the things that you wish to accomplish out of recovery, because it will blow your mind how far you go past that, if you just do the work. So if you're new, get a sponsor. Work the steps, please. It will change your life. And stay in conscious contact with your higher power, because that is the sole reason of why I thought I could drink again.